As we start our making disciples, looking together over the next few weeks at what it means to be a disciple or a close follower of Jesus. Jesus said to his disciples, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." Now, before I kind of get into the main flow of things, I looked at this verse and I thought, that is an incredible verse. Now, I've heard Matthew 28, these verses, loads and loads of times, usually within the context of talks about discipleship. But look again at that verse that Jesus has just said to his disciples, and let your mind be blown away by the amazing words that Jesus just said there. "All authority," says Jesus, "in heaven and on earth has been given to me." Now, you need to almost stop for a moment, don't you? Put the handbrake on and stop and think, well, just how much authority is that? How much authority is Jesus saying to his followers that he actually has? Now, last week we were on Daniel, weren't we? And we were talking about King Nebuchadnezzar. He had power and authority, didn't he? He had power and authority over the nation of Babylon, but because it was the Babylonian Empire, he had power and authority over the conquered nations, including, of course, Israel and Jerusalem. Is that what Jesus means when he says, "All power and all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me"? Well, clearly, no. He must be more powerful than any king in history. More powerful than any empire in history. More than any person or any nation who could state with any truth that they have power and authority. There is nobody and no system that has the power and authority that Jesus claims for himself. Jesus said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." That is amazing. If anyone on earth was to say similar sort of things, we would know that they could not possibly mean that. Their power and authority is nothing compared to what Jesus has. It's too much for one person to even grasp, let alone try to get hold of. When Jesus says, "All authority on heaven and on earth has been given to me," this is one of our wake-up moments. Look at the world around you. Isn't there a sense of power and authority being challenged out again? You know, okay, they're breaking up their treaties. So we can look worried and think, well, you know, it looks like we're getting back into some sort of power race between two large empires. I'm trying to use a different word for them. They're both quite weak, actually. But they want to sort of show their power, don't they? And we can get worried about that. But Jesus says, "All power and authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." Jesus says this to his disciples post-resurrection. He has defeated death. He has authority over heaven and earth. It's an important question to ask ourselves this morning. Do we really believe that Jesus has that power and authority? In our minds, do we grasp what Jesus is saying here about the sort of authority that Jesus has? Abram Kuyper is quoted as saying, "There's not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, 'Mine.'" Jesus has all authority in heaven and on earth. In verse 18 of Matthew chapter 28, Jesus is saying, in effect, he is God. All authority has been given to him, and there is no place on heaven and earth where he is not Lord. You know what I'm saying? Well, that doesn't look the way the news is saying. Jesus is Lord, but they might not recognize it yet. This is amazing, life-changing stuff. And if in our minds we recognize and really believe that Jesus does have all authority from God, then this changes things. Verse 19 of Matthew chapter 28. "Therefore, because Jesus has all authority, the result is that he delegates some of that authority to his disciples." Now, as I was thinking about this, my mind's, and it is easy fused, I must admit, was just like a little bit blown away by that. I was like, you mean discipleship is getting some of that authority and going out with that power and authority? Jesus, who has all authority, chooses to pass on some of that authority to his followers. And I think that's absolutely amazing. In our minds, we need to get this. This morning, you and I are Christians. Or if we're not, we're finding out what it is to be a Christian, because that's why we've come into church. Jesus has commanded his followers to go out into the world to share the good news about forgiveness and new life. And in our minds, Jesus is saying, we know we can do this because we have the authority that Jesus has given us. That's why he says to us this morning, therefore go and make disciples of all nations. If we are followers of Jesus this morning, then we are disciples of Jesus. And Jesus is saying, disciples make disciples. In our minds, do we really believe this morning? You and I were created by God, we're called to follow Jesus. As the Father sent the Son into the world, so the Son who has returned to the Father now sends us with the power of the Holy Spirit into the world to make disciples. You and I have the authority to be disciples who make disciples. Is discipleship important, you might be thinking? Maybe it's just a little add-on to the Christian faith. Maybe it's like, you know, just these little extra things. You don't actually need it to be a Christian. Well, it's worth bearing in mind that one day God will call us to account for what we've done here on earth with our lives. I don't know for sure how this whole judgment thing works out in terms of, you know, whether it's like, I picture it as a kind of courtroom scene, but I'm sure it won't be like that. But somehow, we get called before God and called to account for what we've done with the lives we've been entrusted with and with everything that our lives was entrusted with. Now, you can realize here I'm a bit ignorant in that sense. I don't know exactly what Judgment Day is going to be like. I'm confident that if you're a Christian, it's going to go well. I'm also pretty sure that the things that we hold as so important, that take up so much of our time and energy on earth, may not actually turn out to be that important after all. That what Jesus will really be after, what God will be after, is what we've done as disciples. This morning, Jesus is inviting us to get involved, to become disciples who make disciples. Over the next 7 weeks, you can think of us going together on a training course, using these materials that Chris Rogers has developed. I'm grateful to God for that. And using them to help one another become closer to Jesus as his followers or his disciples. Every Sunday, we'll introduce the theme for the week, and then during the week, we'll have our discipleship groups, which I've already promoted once this morning. But I think these are really key to what we're trying to do. They should be key to church anyway, full stop. If all you're getting on a Sunday morning is listening to me, then I hasten to add you're getting a very poor diet. It's like only getting potatoes when you should have potatoes, veg, and all the other stuff. You go off to a discipleship group during the week, and you get the whole other stuff added onto your plate. As other people share their insights, as God works and God speaks together, but in a smaller group. And having said you don't have to say anything, of course you don't have to say anything, under no pressure to do so, but we miss out a little bit if you don't bring your little contribution to the table. So we're going to introduce the theme for a week on a Sunday and then explore it in detail in our smaller communities or smaller groups. And also there'll be some stuff to do on our own. Someone said it's like homework. Well, of course not like homework. Don't be ridiculous. This isn't school. I'm not going to be sitting here at night marking your papers or any rubbish like that. But it's just to try and get this idea that following Jesus isn't just about the hour on Sunday and maybe a little bit more during the week. It's about everyday discipleship, putting simple little things into our lives that can help us get deeper with Jesus. However, before we go any further, I should screech to a halt and just ask ourselves for a moment, what is this word disciple? Just what is a disciple? Why don't you turn to somebody next to them and try and answer together this question, what's a disciple? Okay, it's a word we've heard quite a bit already now this morning, but what does it mean? What is a disciple? See if you can, I'm not going to ask you to feedback anything out loud, but just go on, share with somebody beside you how you define that word disciple. Okay, well, let's bring you back then, just for a second. Okay, well, I wonder how you got on with your definitions. Did your definitions come anywhere close to these ones that I've picked up? A disciple, this is according to one dictionary that I found, a follower or pupil of a teacher, leader, or philosopher. So that reminds us that this word disciple is not confined just to Christian circles, is it? Anyone who's a follower or pupil of a teacher, leader, or philosopher. I must admit, in schools, I never heard teachers refer to their students as disciples, but you know what we're meaning. A disciple. Another definition says, one who embraces or assists in spreading the teaching of another. Interesting, isn't it? And another definition said, a personal follower of Christ. Jesus said to his disciples, Matthew 28, go and make disciples of all nations. So what's Jesus telling us? Well, disciples, he says, make disciples. He's also saying, well, anyone can be a disciple of Jesus. That's kind of actually important to remember as we start discipleship. We can hear stuff or read stuff about discipleship, and it makes it sound really, really complicated. And is it any wonder that after reading some of these books and that, we just feel a bit kind of lost and confused by it all? Discipleship starts very simply. It starts with our minds recognizing the authority that Jesus has. When we look at the stories that involve Jesus with his disciples, we'll see that as Jesus teaches them what it means to follow him, he very rarely does so by giving them sort of lectures or lessons with very little practical use. Jesus isn't telling the disciples how to do things. Rather, he's trying to show them more about the authority they now have. For example, when Jesus teaches the disciples to minister healing to those who are sick and unwell, he doesn't give them a list of things which they have to do in order for a healing to be successful. So he doesn't give them a sheet that says, point one, pray. Point two, check person is sick. Point three, ask them if they want to get... doesn't do that, does he? Instead, he calls the 12 together, gives them power and authority to drive out demons and cure diseases, and then sent them out to perform the kingdom work of God and to heal the sick. That's Luke chapter 9, if you're looking for it later. In other words, discipleship is based not so much on knowledge, but on authority. A disciple has the authority to carry on the work Jesus began. You and I this morning have the authority to carry on the work Jesus began. Now we might think that's a bit strange because Jesus never walked in lower earth. He wasn't around. It obviously was around, but it wasn't lower earth in these days, was it? It was whatever it was. We have the authority in lower earth to carry on the kingdom work that Jesus began. It's not fully finished yet. We'll be when he returns, but not until then. In your street, think of that. You walk, you work, you witness with the authority to carry on the work that Jesus has begun. Disciples have authority. I wonder if that changes how our minds think about the daily ups and downs that we face. If I was to get you to think, not this morning of the bright, lovely morning of Sunday, because we've probably got a bit of a time off this afternoon, but rather think about tomorrow and Tuesday and Wednesday, and we think, well, actually, one or two things coming up that I might find a bit difficult. There might be one or two tensions in the week ahead. There might be stresses. Indeed, in a typical day, there's probably going to be a mix of some worries as well. In our minds as Christians, we can very quickly lose the enthusiasm of Sunday. In our minds, we can behave as though we're defeated. Well, what good can I do around here, God? What difference can I possibly make? Our minds can think, I've got nothing to say. Let's leave it to the louder people to make their impact. Our minds can say to us, you've got no authority. Do you know what we think will have a huge impact on what we believe and on how we act. This morning and this week in our discipleship groups, we're thinking about a mind that is holy and pleasing to God. In Romans 12, I quoted it from the message, but let's quote it from the NIV. Paul says, "Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." In other words, if you are following Jesus, it's not just the fact that you're going to heaven that's important. Your mind, as it thinks and sees things in this world until Jesus returns, is going to be renewed. You're going to see things with the authority that Jesus gives you. I wonder about this thinking thing, though. It's always quite difficult to know what we're thinking, isn't it? I wonder if you've ever found yourself wondering, I wonder what it is they're thinking. Dan, we've got a video coming up, if that's okay. He's on the case. This may occur to married couples as well as others. When someone thinks, I wonder what they're thinking. Here's a little clip that Emma came across. Well, I thought it was helpful.
...has ruined a weekend away with his girlfriend by saying what he was thinking. Our reporter Emma Bradford is at the scene.
Martin Bishop and Eleanor Shaw had stopped at a cosy country pub after a romantic walk when Miss Shaw looked up meaningfully at Bishop and asked what he was thinking at that very moment. The weekend was about to go very wrong indeed.
I was hoping he would say, maybe this would be a great place to bring the kids one day. Or even something corny but sweet, like, I have everything I'll ever need right here.
And what did you say, Martin?
I said, pigs are much bigger than you expect. One of them was so big you could ride it.
More from us later.
Okay, there we go. Sometimes you think, what on earth were we thinking? In the first century, what were men thinking? In first century Judaism, boys would be taught the Torah, usually by their father. And there was some evidence that there were sort of early schools, not quite primary schools, but early schools up to about the age of 12 or 13. After 13, there was no formal education. If you were a boy, though, and they were marked out for a career, perhaps as a judge, a teacher, a scribe, or head of a synagogue, then they might study as a disciple under a certain scholar. So most people, their education, if they had any at all, would stop at around about 13. However, if you're marked out to go to a particular career, you might become a disciple, and your education would continue under a particular scholar. So if we look at Paul, who wrote Romans, he's an example of someone who did just this. He studied the law under Gamaliel, a famous rabbi in Jerusalem, and he tells us about that in Acts 5 and Acts 22. As a disciple, the idea was that you would follow your teacher, be it their rabbi, whatever, and you'd follow them closely. Yes, you would do sort of formal lessons, formal learning that we would be familiar with. Okay, maybe not in the same way, but we're pretty familiar with the idea that you would sit down and listen and learn. And hopefully you would learn it, and then be able to do the same in due course. But there was more than that. There was also following their example. In other words, you didn't just listen to what they said, you were also to watch what they do. So the disciple would follow their teacher around from place to place, watching and learning the whole time, not just what they said, but how they acted and how they behaved. The way you and I see the world and our place in the world is going to be shaped by what we might call external things and also what we might call internal things. It is possible to know actually quite a lot about Jesus. And there are people here, I'm sure, who know loads and loads of things about Jesus because you've been learning about him for many, many years. But it's possible to know lots of things about Jesus but not actually have our minds renewed by Jesus. We can believe in Jesus, but actually have a mind that is conformed to other ways of thinking. We grow up, all of us have grown up, in a world that is constantly trying to shape us into thinking like it does. So we grow up in families, and yes, we would expect families to try and shape us into a particular way of thinking. We grow up in schools. So if we've been taught in this country, we're going up with the British way of thinking. We grow up in the media, which will have its particular influences on us. In our workplace, you speak about a culture at your workplace, so you'll be shaped into their way of thinking. And so it goes on. Community shapers, newspaper shapers, radio shapers, all sorts of external factors trying to mould our way of thinking. We are constantly being conformed to a way of thinking that others hope will follow. Our minds can be trained to fit in with a dominant culture. So that's kind of like the external forces constantly trying to influence the way we think. And then we have the internal influences that shape us. Our minds are almost sort of almost replaying old ideas and words spoken of us. So you may have heard particular words spoken over you as a young adult or as a child. They may not be true, but they've had a big impact on how our minds view ourselves. As an example of this, I could think back to, it must have been primary school probably. Yeah, it probably certainly was. And I wasn't very good at sport. This may all not come as new news to any of you. And people were fairly vocal about telling me I was pretty rubbish at sport. Now, because I'm speaking up here, I'll tell you that I, of course, ignored them, trained hard, and went to represent Scotland at all sorts of... No, well, obviously not. No, I didn't. I believed what was said, and I disappeared from sport. It's interesting, isn't it, how we come to believe what others may have said about us. I heard I was rubbish at sport, therefore I believed I was rubbish at sport, and therefore I was either absent or so utterly hopeless that it would be much better if I had been absent. You may have been told other things that are considerably more impactful than that, things you come to believe about yourself. Maybe you're told you were uncoordinated. You tried to hit them but missed them for saying that, but never mind. Maybe you're told you were lazy, but you just couldn't be bothered doing anything about that. Or a bit dim and you've yet to work out just what that means. You know what I mean, or the ugly one. Or that you were unable to finish any. And so it goes on, doesn't it? The external stuff trying to shape us into a particular way of thinking, and the internal stuff that we've come to believe about ourselves but that God does not agree with. Our minds are being shaped by the stuff we've picked up. What if our minds, though, are actually holding us back? What if our discipleship this morning isn't being held back by our lack of knowledge or our willingness to turn up, it's just being held back by the chains and the padlocks that we've come to neatly put over our minds? What would be happen if our minds were to be renewed? That's the challenge that Paul sets us this morning. It's the challenge that our first week on making disciples sets us. What would it look like for some of those padlocks to be released, some of those chains to come off, and your mind to be renewed by the presence and good news of Jesus? It could be time for us to get a new view of God and a new view of ourselves. The personal relationship that we have with God is the key to this discipleship stuff. Discipleship begins with our decision to follow Jesus. And becoming a Christian transforms our lives. But we need to do more than simply secure our place in eternity. We're called to live as part of the kingdom of God, a kingdom that is present now and will one day be fully complete. We start this week by using that discipleship tool. We showed you the video last week, and Reddy this morning showed you sort of my version of the discipleship tool, and you get all sorts of different shapes. Now, you'll be pleased to know that in our groups, we don't go into it in a huge amount of detail. It's kind of for your own reflection. It doesn't matter if you turned out to be a pear, a starfish, a pea, which I will get to eventually this week if I keep on trying the questions again and again, or confusingly, an avocado. But you can see what you get to. Rather, it's to show you where you are at in your discipleship at this stage. To try and show you some of the strengths that actually you should be encouraged in, strengths that perhaps you didn't realize you had. and also to show you some areas where perhaps over the next few weeks you could spend a bit of time with God in working them through. In our discipleship group sessions, we take a little bit of time to just to think about our discipleship shape. We're also going to look at, see if you come across anything unexpected or areas you'd like to be working on. And then we're going to spend some time this week thinking about our minds. I hope you see so far this morning that the impact of our minds on our lives is absolutely immense. How we think can be influenced by external things and by internal stuff. And that has a huge impact on how we behave. So this morning, here's a question. Are you and I using our minds to think like disciples? The pressure to conform can be immense. Cute, another video coming up here. But it is possible to protest against the desire to conform. I was listening to a news story on Radio 4 about protest during, it's just a very short thing, I think it may have been last Saturday actually. And as you are aware, people are protesting about all sorts of different things at the moment outside Parliament. It's something to do with Brexit, apparently. However, this wasn't a story about Remain versus Leave. Rather, it was a story much more important than that. It was about Betty the Badger. Every Thursday, you've got the story already, have you? Every Thursday, a lady from Welland Garden City gets on a train to go into London. She takes with her her lunch, her ticket, obviously, and a badger outfit.
Hello, I am Betty Badger, and I go to DEFRA, which is the Department of Food and Farming and Agriculture, all that sort of stuff, every Thursday. And I do that because the people at DEFRA are killing my badger friends. I started going down when they killed my husband, Brian, last autumn. And they also killed 20,000 other badgers. Betty's going to keep going there until one day they stop the badger car.
I should say this morning, I've got no particular views about badgers or badger calls or things like that. But I just thought, when I heard the story, I thought, that's a really strange thing, isn't it? And it would be very tempting to dismiss Mary, as her real name is, as being a little unconventional, wouldn't it? But in her mind, she feels very strongly about the issue. And therefore, she's prepared to change her behaviour, which in this case involves dressing up as a badger and standing outside government offices in central London. Few of us, I doubt, would think that that kind of perseverance was really worthwhile. How is that going to make a difference? And yet, as her interview continued, she said, well, actually, people do stop, because it's not every day you meet a person dressed as a badger in London. I don't know. I don't go into London that often, but I think it might be possible. I don't know. And she said, as I stand outside the office, obviously, I meet people like the security guards, who like to just check that I'm warm and that I'm not, you know, whatever happens to badgers when they're dressed up. And she says, but occasionally I meet people who actually do have influence in that office, and they stop and ask, you know, why am I standing here? And although things haven't changed at the moment, perhaps one day they will. I'm not asking you to go and stand outside government offices dressed as a ridiculous animal, you'll understand, but I'm asking you to say that in your minds, things can change. You might be thinking this morning, it's just impossible for things to change. But actually, Jesus is saying, when you follow him, you are entitled to have a renewed mind. You're entitled to no longer conform to the external or internal expectations that have been placed on you or placed on you by yourself. Things can change. And if you invite Jesus, he will transform your mind. And as you begin to have your mind transformed, all sorts of things can start to happen. You may have, because of life, feel you're not very confident. As you invite Jesus to transform your mind, you might discover you get considerably more confidence. You might think, well, you know, I am actually lacking in skills and abilities. There's nothing I could particularly contribute to the world. As you invite Jesus to renew your mind, he might point out the the one thing that actually you are very good at? You already know the ones you're not good at, so why not ask Jesus to point out the thing you are good at? There may be all sorts of things that have been spoken into your life that you need to invite Jesus just to renew your mind about. In a sense, discipleship does start with a process. It says we're going to challenge the usual way of doing things around here. We're going to challenge the usual way I think about things around here. And I'm going to do so in order to follow Jesus that bit better. Well, in a few moments, as you probably gathered from the stuff that's on the table here this morning, we are going to celebrate communion together. It's time for us to gather around the table to eat bread and drink wine together. But before we do so, I want us to just to spend a bit of time reflecting. It's good within the Christian practices, isn't it, to actually not just race into communion and have it done with and go, well, that's that bit done for another month, but actually to spend some time readjusting our lives in the light of what Christ has done for us. And this morning I thought we could use a piece of paper, if you've got a piece of paper, actually came in and a pen if you've got one. And I thought we could do two things. And this piece of paper you're going to keep. I won't ever see it. Don't worry, nor will anybody else, unless you show them. On the first side, you could write down, I suppose it's the negatives, isn't it? The names you believe about yourself, the things you may have picked up from your journey so far in life, things people have told you, those external and internal things that you've come to believe about yourself. So you might write down, you know, maybe it's your job title, or maybe it's the weaknesses that people have pointed out, the incompetence or the clumsiness or the stupidity or whatever. Write those names down. And then on the other side, don't spend too long on the negative sides. Turn it over and write down the names Jesus believes about you. These are the things the Bible tells about you. So on my list, it would include the negatives. Would include, okay, clumsy and stupid sometimes and incompetent or thoughtless. But there are times it would include saved, forgiven, child of God. Unless you write down those names that Jesus speaks over you this morning, that's your invitation, isn't it, to come and accept again what Jesus has done for us. So we're going to just play very quiet in the background, give you a couple of minutes to do that. The negatives on one side, the words Jesus speaks over you, the Bible says about you on the other. Then we're going to sing some worship, and then we're going to come and have communion together.
To sing if you want to, or if you want to concentrate on your reflection, just listen, that's fine. Stay seated.
Lost, but he brought. show.